Welcome back to this episode of Don't Miss a Beat. I'm here with my co-host and now one of the stars of the ESC, which we are now live at in London. Professor Bhadoganathan here was just part of the terrific study team that just presented the first results of the Fine Arts HF study and some other meta-analysis and pooled analysis that really support how we think about MRA and specifically finerenone for patients with heart failure, but also cardio-kidney metabolic disease. So first and foremost, great to see you in London.
Great to be here.
And congratulations to you and the team on, you know, excellent work as usual.
Thank you, Steve. And it's, I almost feel like you're the host, I'm the guest. So it feels like I'm in a more relaxed position here.
That's right. Well, let's get right into it. So we already knew the top line from the press release that there was going to be a clinically significant benefit with finerenone versus placebo for heart failure with mildly reduced or preserved ejection fraction. And then we were waiting to see what the official results were going to look like. But before we get into the results, Muthu, why don't you just walk us through how this was designed in terms of a study, maybe how it compares to some of the other FPEF heart failure studies with SGLT2 inhibitors and whatnot?
Fine Arts heart failure was a typical large-scale global trial of heart failure today. Participants were enrolled with an ejection fraction that was greater than or equal to 40%. They required evidence of structural heart disease, elevated natriuretic peptide levels, recent diuretic use. And so we really tried to target a population with symptomatic heart failure at high risk for disease progression. The patient profiles of the 6,001 participants that were ultimately randomized were highly comparable with other recent randomized trials in this population, including DELIVER and EMPEROR Preserved. These were older participants with high degrees of multimorbidity. They were well treated on contemporary background therapies. Notably, SGLT2 inhibitor use was in fluctuation. The evidence base for SGLT2 inhibitors was not concrete at the time that Fine Arts heart failure started. And so at baseline, about 13% of people were treated with an SGLT2 inhibitor. But during the trial, many people dropped in or started on an SGLT2 inhibitor. So we felt that the trial represented patients on standard of care therapies.
So I think terrific summary. And I think another point that I took away from it too is that you included patients that were hospitalized or recently hospitalized and kind of your more stable ambulatory patients. I think you had about, of the 6,001, about 1,200 or so had a hospitalization within the last 7 days, including about 600 or so that were actually randomized in the hospital. So really kind of setting the stage for, you know, initiation of finerenone across the spectrum of different care settings, I think was an important thing.
Absolutely. This was an important and upfront decision-making to enroll and enrich the population with worsening heart failure. About 50% of the cohort had a worsening heart failure event within the last 3 months. And so many of these patients were at high risk for recurrent events, including recurrent hospitalization. The other populations that we specifically intended to target included people at the highest end of the ejection fraction spectrum, including LVF above 60%. Those patients we've had limited therapeutic options in. There's been some suggestion of attenuation, including in the TOPCAT trial that preceded this investigation. So that was of particular importance. Well, and then finally, Fine Arts heart failure is the first trial to evaluate finerenone in a patient population without diabetes. Previous CKD trials all had concomitant type 2 diabetes. So this allowed for unique examination of that subject.
Yeah, that's a terrific point that, again, we forget that Fidelio and Figaro were exclusively diabetic kidney disease, and we hadn't had really large outcome studies in a non-diabetic population. So, all right, Muthu, we know their top-line results were clinically significant, but why don't you walk us through the primary endpoint, some of the key secondary endpoints for efficacy?
Yeah, so over a median follow-up of 2.6 years follow-up, finerenone reduced the primary endpoint, which was cardiovascular death and total, that included first and recurrent worsening heart failure events by 16%. This was highly statistically significant. The absolute risk reduction was about 3 per 100 patient years. That translated to a number needed to treat of about 30 per 100 patient years. Furthermore, finerenone reduced secondary endpoints of total worsening heart failure events and improved health status and symptom burden as assessed by the Kansas City Cardiomyopathy Questionnaire. There was no untoward or new signals of safety that was uncovered that we didn't know about from prior trials of finerenone. Finerenone expectedly increased serum potassium levels, but lower rates of hypokalemia. There were no hyperkalemia-related deaths, and hyperkalemia-related hospitalizations were very infrequent between arms.
So I think, you know, going back to the primary endpoint here, it seemed like the component that was in the more favorable direction was, as expected, you know, the heart failure hospitalization, worsening heart failure component. You know, CV death was favorable in the right direction, but of course, we know how hard it is to achieve statistical significance in these types of trials. But do you want to speak a little bit to that and like kind of the CV death versus worsening heart failure benefits?
Absolutely. I think the issue is likely one of statistical power. This is a population that is at very high risk for disease progression and worsening heart failure events, but the overall mortality rates is much reduced. And furthermore, how patients die in HFpEF is quite different from how a patient with HFrEF may die, which is typically of cardiovascular reasons, whereas in HFpEF, primarily also driven by their multitude of comorbidities, may die from a variety of reasons, even aside from cardiovascular death. And so the number of cardiovascular deaths in these trials is quite few. And so even with a clinically significant reduction in the point estimate, the confidence intervals were often wide and were unable to definitively show that there was a reduction in cardiovascular
death. And very well said. And you know, one of the benefits of trying to pool these analyses too, and I know we won't have time to discuss that today, but of course, I know you had a great publication on the pool fine arts plan words study. But another endpoint I want to talk about too, just because we've been used to thinking about this with our SGLT2 inhibitor trials, is the KCCQ. And, you know, you had a 1.6, you know, point improvement, placebo versus the placebo arm. And, you know, reality is that's pretty comparable to what you see in these large global mega trials. Some of the exclusively, you know, hospitalized trials, the smaller trials with SGLT2 inhibitors, for example, can get larger KCCQ improvements. But put that 1.6, you know, point improvement in KCCQ in context for us.
I agree. I think it's consistent with other evidence-based therapies that form our guidelines. The 1.6, as a reminder, is an average effect across a broad global population. So some patients may have significantly greater health status benefits, some may have less. Furthermore, the 1.6 is on the absolute scale, and many patients in these trials had mild symptoms of heart failure, and so their health status may not be significantly impaired at baseline. So we wouldn't anticipate large magnitude absolute improvements in health status. It's difficult to improve an already well person. So overall, I think this is in keeping with prior evidence and prior trials. We are conducting additional analyses that will be presented at the HFSA meeting related to a breakdown of additional domains of the KCCQ and a responder analysis assessing who are the patients who develop maybe clinically significant improvements like 5-10 point improvements in the KCCQ. And was that differentially observed between arms?
I look forward to seeing those data, and again, very well said. You know, thinking about what we've been talking about with HFrEF for some time now, and that's, you know, rapid sequence, incremental benefits of all these different therapies. You know, now we have two different classes of medication with definitively positive trials. We, of course, in heart failure with mildly reduced or preserved ejection, we, of course, have the SGLT2 inhibitor class. Now we have non-steroidal MRA with finerenone. I mean, one of the things that I noticed right away was the early separation of event curves for both the primary composite, but also the heart failure, worsening heart failure component. We also haven't talked about yet, but the totally independent effect of background SGLT2 inhibitor, no heterogeneity. So again, it suggests fully additive benefit, you know, in addition to SGLT2 therapy. So why don't you talk about, how do you think we're going to have you know, dual therapy or two-arm therapy really be our definitive standard of care now? Or how do we think about SGLT2 inhibitors and or non-steroidal MRA?
Yeah, this efficacy profile that we saw in fine arch heart failure was very comparable to what we've seen with the SGLT2 inhibitors. It had a clinically meaningful overall result on a relevant endpoint, but also the effects were broadly consistent across all clinically relevant subgroups. And as such, I think rather than targeting this to a specific narrow subgroup or a phenotype of HFpEF, I think this can be a broadly applicable drug that can be added or used alongside an SGLT2 inhibitor. In my view, this is a pillared approach is also appropriate at higher ejection fraction. While these patients face lower relatively, on the relative scale, lower rates of death, they still face a very high burden of worsening heart failure and disease progression. And so we should, especially in those who we meet in the hospital who are at very high risk of early events, take this pillared approach of combination medical therapy up front. And this is a strategy that is being tested in two randomized clinical trials, one in CKD called the Confidence Trial, and the second in heart failure called Confirmation Heart Failure. These both are testing the combined use of finerenone with an SGLT2 inhibitor.
Now, look forward to those results. And yeah, I think the standard takeaway we can have right now is that we have a definitive positive trial for a very difficult to treat patient population that both improves clinical outcomes, improves health status, fully independent of SGLT2 inhibitor use, and again, with early separation of event curves. So I think, you know, we should really try to embrace combination therapy. And then we look forward to seeing, you know, the future data with the specifically hospitalized patient population, the patient that might have the highest absolute gains from combination therapy. Let's talk just a little bit briefly on hyperkalemia, and also specifically, you know, the talk of, well, steroidal versus non-steroidal MRA and maybe less hyperkalemia with non-steroidal MRA versus our standard spironolactone approach. How do you see those data shaking out here?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. I think hyperkalemia is the elephant in the room, and it has really been the Achilles heel of MR antagonism in any disease state. There have been few head-to-head experiments of a steroidal MRA and a non-steroidal MRA. The preceding ARTS program, which was a phase two program of clinical trials, did include one small study that directly compared spironolactone and finerenone and showed that there were, in fact, lower rates of hyperkalemia in the finerenone-treated group. That said, that was in a slightly prior therapeutic era. There's different doses that were being used.
Low-dose finerenone, right?
Yeah. There were different doses that are being used in fine arts. And so we're then left with trying to compare indirectly safety data from each of the MRA heart failure trials. And I will caution that this is a very, very difficult exercise. Not only were these patients on varying degrees of background therapy, meaning their background risk is quite different, but also the patient populations may be different. You know, for instance, fine arts enrolled particularly high-risk patients with recent worsening heart, many of whom had recent worsening heart failure events. And then finally, it's difficult to actually compare equipotent doses. Finerenone actually uniquely studied a 40 milligram dose that is not currently commercially available based on the CKD programs. And so the intention of that was to enhance efficacy in certain populations, especially with preserved kidney function, where we would think that they can tolerate additional potassium handling. But again, it's difficult to compare apples to oranges when these trials really were conducted with different designs, different target populations, and different doses of MRA therapy.
I think that apples to oranges comparison, this is going to be the ongoing debate now, both from an efficacy and safety perspective with, you know, already available spironolactone versus now finerenone and the evidence. I mean, there was a great question from the panelists at the session about, you know, what are the guidelines going to do here? And I think it's funny that the guidelines already can't agree on what to do with the TOPCAT trial. You know, ESC doesn't even have a recommendation for HFpEF for steroidal MRA. We do have a class 2B for HFpEF in the United States. We'll see how the evidence for non-steroidal MRA and finerenone gets integrated with TopCat, if at all, and on which side of the Atlantic might be different on that. But Mutu, I just want to say first and foremost, congratulations and thanks for, you know, not only serving as a co-host, but also our special guest expert today on all things finerenone and fine arts. And I just really also want to thank our audience, listeners, for tuning in to this episode of Don't Miss a Beat. To listen to this episode and all future and prior episodes, please go to either hcplive.com or you can find this episode and others on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Thanks again.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you all.